The Mutual Broadcasting System presents STRAT, Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with retired Marine Intelligence Officer, Lieutenant Colonel Hal Kempfer. Now, here's Hal.
Welcome to STRAT. Welcome to Strategic Risk Assessment Talk. And today I'm going to talk about something that's somewhat dominating what would be a very busy news cycle, regardless, with all the things going on around the world. But I'm going to talk about something that has certain military importance, or growing military importance, and that's the ICE operations, the anti-illegal immigration operations going on in Minnesota, and particularly in Minneapolis, and the significant protest activity surrounding them that's been happening, and some of the things that have rather profound legal implications for the United States in terms of some things being done with the military. Now, on January 7th, which is some time ago, Governor Tim Walz of Minnesota issued an order for the Minnesota National Guard to prepare to deploy. That means, in other words, you need to do all those things, get ready to deploy somewhere. And this was following the killing of a 37-year-old woman, a Minnesota resident, Renee Good, by a federal immigration officer. And you may recall that she had been, she was using her car, she kind of turned it in such a way to block traffic. They had an encounter with her, they asked her to get out of the car, and then she backed up, turned, sped away, hit the officer, but not before the officer apparently fired four shots, killing her. In there. And of course, this has been a very, very controversial killing, and I'll allude to that more in a bit. Now, dozens of members of the state patrol's response team have been activated to respond to unrest. And he said that, look, they're ramping this whole thing up. So he's bringing in state assets, state law enforcement assets. He's preparing the National Guard to step in. So that gives you an idea of how big this stuff was getting going then. Okay, let's bring it a little closer now. On Saturday, January 17th, as the protests in Minnesota continue and there's a lot of tension between the demonstrators and certainly between the federal officers or federal agents that are doing the federal immigration enforcement operations, he announced that the Minnesota National Guard has been, quote, mobilized, unquote, and is on standby as needed. So in other words, they have been brought into essentially their armories, their National Guard armories. They've been, you know, presumably getting training on civil unrest or whatever else they're going to get trained on doing, and they're on standby if needed. Well, that was Saturday the 17th. And then in a Facebook post, the Minnesota Department of Public Safety said at Governor Walz's direction that the Minnesota National Guard's mobilized and is now staging to support law enforcement and emergency management agencies. Now, they are being mobilized under state authority, presumably under state funding. I can't imagine that the National Guard Bureau in Washington, D.C., or the White House or the Pentagon would authorize federal funding for this, but they are being staged in support of local law enforcement emergency management agencies. And the question is, what are they being staged to do to support local law enforcement? And that's a really big question. The department further clarified this by saying that the National Guard are not deployed to city streets at this time. They're ready to help public safety, to include protection of life, preservation of property, supporting the rights of all those who assemble peacefully. Basically saying, we're not going to use them for a law enforcement role, but they will be in support of law enforcement. And that can be done. Now, under state authority, the National Guard under state authority, under the governor, can potentially do law enforcement unless there's some state law that precludes that. But under state authority, they can do law enforcement. They're posse comitatus, that federal law against using the military to do law enforcement, doesn't apply to the National Guard if they're under state authority. All right, so presumably he could use them for that. And so hence they put out this clarification message. Now, on Sunday, January 18th, the day after, President Trump announced he's preparing 1,500 troops, federal troops, to potentially deploy to Minnesota. These will be coming from the U.S. Army's 11th Airborne Division. This is certainly the 11th Airborne Division, famous from World War II, but was reinstituted a couple of years ago or a few years ago. And it is based up in, I think it was 2 years ago, I believe. And it is based up in Alaska. And this is part of our big Arctic focus and looking at the vast distances up there. And an airborne division was a very smart idea because they're airborne. They can parachute in. They're air mobile. They can come in by helicopters. And frankly, when you look at the Arctic, you know, particularly across North America, Canada, or anywhere else, that's kind of how you get along. Definitely in the winter months, that's kind of how you might want to get around because there's just a lot of snow and it's very difficult to move across terrain because of the deep snow. So that does kind of make sense. Traditionally, that's been done, and I could take you back to operations in World War II, where they used airborne commandos, especially in more difficult winter operations, where they would drop them, for example, in Norway, where they drop commandos into the mountains, they'd parachute them in. That just made the most sense, although they didn't have helicopters back then, I would point out. But that's what they have up there. But long story short, if you're stationed in Alaska year-round, you're trained for cold weather. And right now, in January in Minnesota, it is cold weather. So you have troops that are trained for that. Furthermore, as far as I know, there are a lot of those, I don't know if all the brigades in that division are actually on a rotation where they go to other parts of the world. They might be staying up there. That might be an Arctic, I think it's part of the Arctic focus, so I don't recall them on the regular rotation to go do things like in Kuwait or in the Far East or something else, or in Korea or someplace else in the world. I think they stay pretty much up there. So it doesn't mess up the deployment cycle of all of the Department of War, Department of Defense in terms of units. So it kind of made sense that they'd be tapped. And I had digressed, but I just point out why that would make a lot of sense, that would be the unit he would go for. All right. Then on, I should mention going last Thursday that on January 15th, President Trump had threatened to invoke the Insurrection Act to deploy U.S. military forces to Minnesota if officials do not start cracking down on anti-ICE agitators. Now, right now, as I understand it, a lot of the certainly a lot of the protest activity is in and around the federal building in Minneapolis. It's not all over the city. Many of the officials there have made great pains to include law enforcement, saying, look, the city is not in flames. There are concerted protests, you know, aimed at ICE and certainly aimed around the federal building. And presumably, if federal troops go in there, they would probably be around the federal building. Now, my understanding is that local law enforcement, presumably state law enforcement, are actually helping federal agents, ICE officers, and special agents attached to them in getting in and out of some of these areas where there's a lot of protest activity. So they provide a level of security and crowd control for the ICE operations going on. What they don't do is they don't actually participate in the ICE operations. They don't go in there and support them. They don't help kick in the door. They don't go in there and help arrest anybody. They don't do anything like that. But they are providing a certain level of support. In some ways, the level of support that they're providing reminds me of what they were using federal troops to do with ICE operations in Southern California. So I would just bring that up. That is something that seems to be missed. You kind of get the impression that all they're doing is obstructing. Look, I will talk about this, but actually, I understand the officers on the street are providing a certain level of crowd control, except around the federal building, which is where most of the protests are. And the federal building, federal property, is federal jurisdiction. So that may be part of the reason why you don't see a lot of local law enforcement doing stuff there. I also think they probably want to avoid that whole thing because that's actually where you'd have the biggest chance of a difficult confrontation between local law enforcement and the protesters would be in and around the federal building. Now, the Minneapolis mayor, Jacob Frey, has criticized the administration's immigration operations in Minnesota and caused a surge of federal agents as an occupying force that quite literally invaded our city. So he's put it very much in war terms. He says you can go through whatever rhetorical flourish you want, but when you have 3,000 ICE agents and border control come to the city, when you've got the supposed threat of 1,500 military coming to the city, well, that's very much what it feels like. Now, he's put this in very draconian terms. And some of his rhetoric is kind of setting the stage for what the White House then responds to. Now, the administration has sent thousands of law enforcement to Minnesota. I understand it could be up to 2,000 to 3,000, maybe more, federal officers for these ICE operations up there. That's set apart from the 1,500 troops that they've talked about that may end up going. As I understand, someone said they kind of outnumber local law enforcement about 2 to 1, which is really kind of surprising. If you look at that, that's a pretty heavy federal presence that's in that city. Now, on Tuesday, January 13th, the Department of Justice said it would not pursue criminal civil rights investigation into the shooting of Renee Good. That's that 37-year-old woman that was shot when her car hit a ICE officer, and then as she was turning into him, he opened fire on her. So he said they're not doing a civil rights investigation on that. Very controversial. So that is something that kind of weighs on a lot of people, because part of the reason part of the rhetoric that the administration had been putting out was wait till the investigation is done before anybody passes judgment. And now they turn around and said, well, there is not going to be an investigation. Now, to make a determination not to do an investigation, there at the very least had to be a preliminary inquiry. And I'm hoping that somebody releases whatever came of this preliminary inquiry to explain what happened, why they came to this conclusion that there was no need for a civil rights investigation. And frankly, from what I saw, it looked like a horrific tragedy, obviously, but it did look like she inadvertently did turn into the officer. And he had just been, not too long before, in a situation where he's trying to get somebody out of a car, and that person took off in the car while his arm was in there and drugged the guy for a very long period of time while he's hanging onto the car. So let's just say this. He's had a lot of experience with recalcitrant drivers doing things that can put him into harm's way. And if somebody does come at you with a car and you perceive that there's a threat to your life, that is a justifiable use of deadly force. However you want to describe the incident, I will say that if you feel that your life is threatened, and a car can be a deadly weapon, then that would be a justifiable use. That would be self-defense. That would be a justifiable use of deadly force. All right. Now, the move to do this is a very stark departure from what is usually done in previous administrations. They would almost always do an investigation like that just to clear the air. And this administration has chosen not to. And frankly, federal prosecutors are protesting over this stuff. 6 lawyers from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Minnesota quit, along with 4 leaders of the U.S. Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division. So that's a pretty strong protest to what this administration is doing. Among them was Joseph Thompson, who was the second in command of the U.S. Attorney's Office up there. Interestingly, he led that large-scale federal inquiry last year into all the fraud that was going on up into Minnesota as well. And it also, had led part of what he did, that led in part to some of the crackdown on anti-immigration, was because of that fraud thing tied to Somali immigrants. A wave of federal prosecutors in Minnesota, Washington have resigned now, obviously, as I just decided. And this thing may not be completely over. And by the way, even in the discussion that they said where they're not going to investigate, they didn't close the door on there eventually being an investigation. So that may actually come about. Now, one thing they did close the door on was the state of Minnesota or Minneapolis PD investigating these federal officers. And on that one, that is kind of how the system works, all right? The feds will go in, the federal government will sometimes go in and investigate state and local officials. That happens, but it doesn't happen the other way around. And if it did happen the other way around, regardless of the causes, if that was something the states and local officials could do, it would be utter chaos and anarchy across the land. And you can imagine, I mean, we've got states and localities that do all sorts of things and have all kinds of interesting ideas. And if every time a federal officer, you can imagine every federal investigation of a corrupt state or local official, that state or local official, if they had the power to turn around and then investigate the federal agents, the federal investigators, it would just be open season on corruption, wrongdoing, fraud, waste, abuse, whatever, across the land. It would be just absolute chaos. So there's a reason why they can't do it. I was in a command when I was in uniform on active duty that had a problem with Marines on the border. There were Marines that were in a position. They were basically a reconnaissance mission on the border, looking for smugglers, bad guys across the border. And it just happened, there was a teenager that was out there tending his flock of sheep. And my recollection is he had, I think, a .22 rifle or something. And these particular Marines, even though they're part of a reconnaissance unit, they weren't reconnaissance Marines. They were came from the support part of the unit. And they were, as near as I can recall, they were kind of allowed to go do this mission as almost, they said, here, this will be good training for you. Why don't you go out and do this stuff? And they put them into there. And none of them was trained in reconnaissance skills. I don't think any of them were even infantry for that matter. And so they were doing something they don't normally do. And hence, some of those things would be kind of intuitive to a reconnaissance thing. Even regular infantry doing reconnaissance, some of those, you know, discipline things in terms of sound, light, whatever, in terms of camouflage. Somewhere in there, the teenager heard rustling in the brush. He presumed it was, he presumed it was either a coyote or maybe some other small animal, and he opened fire on the position where the Marines were at, a horrific communication thing, and they ended up shooting and killing the teenager. Why do I bring this up? Because the Texas Rangers conducted an investigation and then tried to arrest the Brigadier General in charge of the Joint Task Force. They were camped outside the military base where the Joint Task Force was. This got into some core issues of federal versus state. And eventually, of course, that all kind of went by the wayside. All of it was handled under the Uniform Code of Military Justice within the military system. But the attempt by the state to somehow investigate an active duty Brigadier General who commanded a unit where this took place, well, that was obviously something that was not going to happen. And I point to that, and I look to this thing now, and I go, there are real reasons. Regardless of one's political opinion on what happened, regardless of how people feel about President Trump, or they feel about these ICE raids or whatever, there are very substantial reasons why you don't want locals and state investigating federal officers, federal law enforcement for these things. Now, there was another thing that happened after the shooting. DHS was conducting a targeted traffic stop of a man who turned out to be a Venezuelan national. He fled the scene in his vehicle before crashing into another car. Okay, so what does that mean? That means you have somebody who, again, has a car, potentially a deadly weapon, and he's driving erratically, putting the public at risk, and he crashed the car, all right? When the DHS officer rolled up on him, a couple of people came out and started attacking the officer with a shovel and a broom. And I know most of you are saying, well, those aren't deadly weapons. I would say, au contraire, you've never seen a Marine with a shovel or a broom, okay? There's all sorts of things that can become deadly weapons if you know how to use them, and definitely a shovel, and I would say definitely a broom if you know what you're doing. Anyway, in that entire engagement, he ended up firing a shot, which hit the fleeing Venezuelan immigrant in the leg. And I would point this out. A lot of attention being focused on this. I'm sure there's going to be calls for a civil rights investigation on him as well. But that was it. He just shot the guy in the leg. Now, he's chased this guy down, all right? This guy who was in a car who had just put the public at great risk. He gets out. He gets attacked by multiple people that don't like ICE or whatever. And in that scuffle, he shoots the guy in the leg. With all the adrenaline that's pumping, with everything going on, would he have been justified in firing a second shot? Probably would have. And I would say in most cases, any judge that looked at that would have turned around and said, yeah, if I was in your situation, he didn't do it. He didn't fire that second shot. He stopped at the wound leg. And I say this because despite what you may have heard, and I think President Biden even said this once, we don't train our folks to shoot people in the legs. All right. That's not something that, I don't know if local law enforcement doing that, or state. I sure as heck know the federal side, we don't train anybody to shoot people in the legs any more than we run around and sing songs as singing cowboys and then shoot the guns out of their hands. That's Hollywood. That's fiction. All right. We shoot center mass, and in many cases, we also aim for headshots as well, depending on the tactical situation. But that's it. Those are the two places we shoot. We don't shoot them in the hands, we don't shoot them in the leg, and we don't shoot them in the foot. Although there have been cases where federal special agents who weren't paying attention accidentally shot themselves in the foot, but that's another issue. All right. So DHS said the man violently resisted, resisted arrest, violently assaulted the officer before the two other people came out of nearby and then also attacked the officer. So there's a lot that goes on there. And I just point that out. But that is all adding to the tension of what's happening at the time. Now, the man who was shot was transported to a hospital, and he lived. He did not die. But I just want to say that I think the ICE officer actually showed restraint in this issue, but it does add to this whole thing. So what's happening in Minnesota and Minneapolis? You have a surge of law enforcement out there. You potentially may have 1,500 federal troops that may show up. You potentially have National Guard troops showing up. The federal troops, unless the president invokes the Insurrection Act, cannot do law enforcement. However, the president has threatened to invoke the Insurrection Act. And if you have a situation where local authorities are obstructing federal law enforcement or enabling others to obstruct federal law enforcement, you kind of are setting the legal precedent for someone saying, hey, this is an insurrection. They are openly not complying or openly trying to defy federal law. I can take you back to the Whiskey Rebellion. I can take you back to civil rights. I can take you back to the desegregation of schools and universities in the South. All of these things will point to situations where, or I can point you to the riots in LA in the early 90s. And it wasn't because local law enforcement and state were doing everything they could to try and deal with the riots. Things had gotten completely out of hand. They were overwhelmed and federal troops brought in, and the president did actually declare the Insurrection Act. Although President Bush, the first Bush at that time, put some real conditions on that they were in support of civilian law enforcement. They weren't actually out there doing their own thing. So if you look at past instances of imposing the Insurrection Act, that, and you look at what's going on now, you go, regardless of whether you agree with what's going on with ICE, regardless of what you agree with the tactics being employed with these immigration raids, whatever, you have to kind of look at what's going on. Now, immigration is not a new concept. A nation state controlling who can come into the country, who can stay in the country, how long they can stay in the country, if they have to leave the country. These are not new concepts. They are pretty much core federal responsibilities in the Constitution. They are not state responsibilities, period. They're not local responsibilities. These are core federal responsibilities when dealing with non-U.S. citizens, all right? So this is not a new concept, per se, of doing immigration enforcement. It's been around for a very, very long time. So this is a long way of saying that the conditions for invoking the Insurrection Act are definitely in place. And we could see those 1,500 troops from 11th Airborne Division from Alaska come down. They could end up on the streets, actually, if the Insurrection Act is imposed. They could be on the streets patrolling. They could be conducting law enforcement operations. More importantly, if Governor Waltz deploys those National Guard troops, I would not be surprised if President Trump would turn around and then federalize those National Guard troops. Kind of similar to what happened in Similar happened with Governor George Wallace in Alabama when he tried to prevent deputy U.S. Marshals from escorting African-American students for desegregating the University of Alabama. And the president federalized those troops and hence stopped them from enabling the governor to defy federal court orders and federal law in terms of desegregation. So this is not a new concept. A lot of times people say, well, this is unprecedented. It's very, very precedented. And I just point this out. And then all of this is in the backdrop. And you have to remember where some of this came from. With this massive, what could be multi-billion, I think $8 billion was the last number I heard, fraud investigation involving federal funds that was, a lot of it was going to child care centers and small businesses that were owned by Somali immigrants, that some of which was actually being filtered back to Somalia and making its way to Al-Shabaab, which is an Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist organization. It is an Al-Qaeda-linked terrorist organization where our own U.S. forces have been conducting military operations to counter for many, many years. So this is not some group we don't know about. We know all about this group. We've been dealing with Al-Shabaab for a very long time. So that's where this all came from, and that's all happening in the background while this is all occurring. So in other words, I don't see this issue disappearing real soon. I can see the protests. I imagine things are going to get hotter before they get cooler. Although it is Minnesota in the winter. Things are kind of cooler there, period. But I don't anticipate this thing going away anytime soon. And certainly that fraud investigation is going to go on for a very long time. Although I have a feeling they're doing a little shuffling around getting new attorneys because of what just happened in the Minnesota U.S. Attorney's Office and then what happened in the Civil Rights Division back in D.C. And I have a feeling that issue is not going to go away either. I think we're going to hear more about that. So anyway, a lot going on in Minneapolis. I hope I was able to unpack and clarify some issues. And yes, I do have an opinion about federal law enforcement. My background, I've worked in federal law enforcement. So along with being a retired Marine, and as a Marine, I actually worked with federal law enforcement on domestic issues investigating criminal activity. So I have an unusual background in that regard, a little bit different, but I do have strong opinions about that, and I have seen state locals assert themselves in ways that just are not found anywhere under federal law or the Constitution. And I would bring something, one more thing. There was an issue here in Los Angeles where a FBI special agent was running a confidential informant in the LA County jails. The jails are run by the LA County Sheriff's Department. There was all sorts of corrupt things happening in the jails. There was all kinds of problems going on there. When it was discovered that this guy was a confidential informant for the FBI, the sheriff and the undersheriff sent deputies to that FBI special agent's house with the intent to arrest her. All right? Believe me, there was a lot of federal to county discussion on what the sheriff was trying to do. Long story short, she was not arrested, the FBI special agent. She was not charged. Her supervisor was neither arrested nor charged. A lot of hard feelings. And then the sheriff and the undersheriff kind of managed to make this confidential informant disappear within the jail system to hide this confidential informant so the FBI couldn't talk to this guy. Neither the U.S. attorney could talk to this guy. And at the end of the day, despite all this bluster and everything about, oh, the FBI was doing this and how could they investigate us, we're working together, blah, 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 all of that, the sheriff went to prison, the undersheriff went to prison, and they were federally prosecuted successfully. So I kind of bring that up as something that I think the officials in Minneapolis need to think about, certainly the officials in Minnesota. If they push it too far, there can be repercussions, which they may not have fully assessed. Thanks for listening to Strat. You can also go to stratpodcast.com. You can always go to my YouTube channel, Hal Kempfer TV. And you can always go to my corporate website, www.gripsa.com, for Global Risk Intelligence Planning. Thanks for listening. Hope you listen to the next one. There is just so much going on right now, and I'm going to try and put these strats out more frequently because of just the number of issues. Little things are happening in the world in Greenland, Venezuela, Iran, the West Pacific, and I probably need to spend some time talking about that as well.
Strat Strategic Risk Assessment Talk with Hal Kempfer is presented by the Mutual Broadcasting System and is always accessible at stratpodcast.com, as well as most leading podcast portals, including Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. For more of Hal Kempfer's current events media appearances, please visit HalKempferTV.com. Be sure to like and subscribe to Strat at your favorite podcast provider.